Welcome to episode 77 of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants.
Whoop whoop.
Mo and I are nice and close together today.
Yeah, that's why I'm sweating so much, buddy.
Yeah, because I'm steaming hot in this fiery shirt. Man, I'm really excited about today. I think we have a pretty cool guest, and this is the very first time that we have a guest with us in the studio.
Which is absolutely awesome, which is also why you are so close to me. Probably we got to address, follow all of you worrying about our health.
Right, yeah.
You're vaccinated twice.
I'm vaccinated,
and
yeah.
Immune. I'm vaccinated once and tested.
Yeah.
So everyone here is
everyone's here is tested or vaccinated.
That's just to be sure.
Yeah. Just so that's
not and we a hang out all the time anyway. So
so if we were going to get it, we would have probably gotten it from each other already. But no, I'm really excited about this. And anything that we want to run over before we introduce our guest?
I'm not sure. I mean, we could also just annoy our guest with our personal stories.
Yeah, what did you have for lunch? No.
I love personal stories.
Cool, then let's not waste any more time. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, from Brazil to here in Munich, we welcome you to Makul. Yeah,
I'm
man.
So, I'm so used to that. Isn't it?
The full experience.
I feel at home now.
Man,
home is where the applause is.
Home is where the applause
is. We should print that on shirts.
Oh, then I'm never home, dude. Never home.
Wow, that's an eternal search, right?
For the applause.
Yeah, you go.
There's approval.
Like so you're always approval. Searching for home.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I literally moved abroad in search of it. And I'm still hunting it down. Oh my God. So Makul, nice
Hello
to
there.
Have you here, man. Welcome. You're the very first guest in house.
Man, this is an honor. Like this looks amazing. I gotta say, I was already excited when I got the invitation, but when I got here, I was like, whoa, this Dude, is cool.
It's nice to finally be able to like show this off to people because I mean, I think it looks good on YouTube and I think it's nice. Like in general to be here, it's fun for me to be here, but I feel like the guests so far, like Morgan and Georgie didn't really get to see it so much. They get to see this one angle here.
Yeah, because probably we can leak that. If you're a guest via Zoom, you'll see us through that camera.
Okay.
And the issue is when you do it, so it's a bit weird for our guests that we get over Zoom because obviously they see themselves on the screen there and it's kind of an endless loop.
Oh.
So they'd rather see
like that
than
Inception
the beauty.
Effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of like it could be like an aesthetic choice of the podcast.
I mean, if this was really artsy, like really artsy, artsy.
Yeah. I mean, we're already talking forever, so why not just
we already know what
add
to do.
That to the optical level?
Man, so I guess the obvious question right off the bat is, you're living in Munich for how long now?
I'm living in Munich now for almost 7 years. Funny story, I didn't think I was going to stay 7 years. I thought I was going to come here and stay 6 months. But then I just like was caught into the web. Like the Munich spider web. I think you know what I mean.
It's super
like,
easy to stay.
Right?
It's super easy to stay. Yeah. So how was it for you? Because when I first came, I saw it as these like little incremental windows. It was like, okay, I'll go for you. Cause there's like this 3 month visa. Like I'll come and I'll try it out for 3 months.
Yes.
Right? And then there's like, oh, you know, if you do this language learning thing, then you can do like 9 months, I think. So I was like, oh, I'll do another few months. And then it became like, oh, I should really work on getting a visa because I'm going to stay for, you know, for an indefinite amount of time. So how was it for you like coming for 6 months? And
yeah, so to me, it's exactly like this. I feel like there's almost like a Munich lifetime plan where it, like you come to Munich and you first get, you're faced with that, with all the difficulties that are there, right? So like speaking another language or learning another language and so on. And the system is also kind of difficult. So you feel like, oh, I don't belong here. They don't want me to be here.
Yeah.
But there's also the excitement of being away from home. So like you kind of put it in a scale and then you're like, kind of nice. I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to come here with a job searching visa, which lasts for 6 months.
How does that work? A job searching
visa? So for Brazilians, there is an agreement. I don't know how it is nowadays because it's been 7 years, but I think there's still something like that.
Okay.
And it's literally a job searching visa. If you're graduated in university and you have like a relevant profession that like they're searching for in Germany, then you can actually come to Germany with a job seeking visa, right?
Oh, that's crazy.
And then you can stay for 6 months, because the issue is everybody comes here as a tourist and they're like, oh, awesome, I want to stay, but you can't, it's not legal. So with a job searching visa, you can come, and if you find a job, you can stay. Like if you're a tourist, you have to go back home and like you're not even allowed to work, right? But with a job seeking visa, you can actually stay if you find a job. So I came here with that excuse. Oh, I'm going to get this visa to come and stay with, at the time, my girlfriend to stay for 6 months. And she had a job at the opera. She's a dancer. She had a job at the opera, and it was like kind of going to end at that time. And I thought, oh, we're going to go back to Brazil. Like she likes Brazil. We're going to go back home. So I just spent some time there. And I remember like when I left Brazil, my mom kind of crying and saying like, oh, you're not going to come back and so on. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to stay 6 months. And here I am like 7 years later, I built a life.
And your mom is just, she's a pile. It's just an ocean of tears. Like, I knew you were never coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
My mom, you know, it's just like, you're going to move back to Tennessee one day, right? And I'm like, I wish I could promise that. I really wish I could.
Yeah. And now the funny thing is like my mom, so mom, you knew that I didn't come back home yet, but I thought I was sure I was going to come back. And then, the issue is like, then every year Brazil became more difficult in a way, like politically, economically, like things were crumbling already a little bit. So now we see the effect of all that. So
this is like circa 2014.
Exactly. Yeah. 2014. And then, my mom was saying, you better not come back. You know, like she was like
to protect you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no, don't come back. Like it makes no sense. And then my friends were also like, hey man, like, why would you come back? You have a nice life there and so on. But then again,
that's good friends, dude.
Back to the story. Then I came here and with that job searching visa, and then like on the last month when actually my visa expired. So in the last month I got a job offer. Finally, I applied for a few jobs. I was not applying at all. I was a freelancer. I was like, yep, I'm going to stay here. And then we moved back to Brazil. But then I realized my ex-girlfriend at the time said, oh, I got a new offer at the opera and I want to stay. I want to stay longer. Like there's this cool job offer and this cool choreographer is going to come, blah, blah, blah. And I realized, all right, shit's getting real. I need to figure myself out here, because if I want to stay, I need a visa. And then I applied for a few jobs and so on. And on the last month I got an offer, friends of friends, you know, connections. And I ended up making good connections there. And then I got the job. And actually, I applied for the visa before the time was right. So I'm not illegal. Have never been illegal here.
Oh, we're going to check in on that in post before we launch this.
And then I applied for the job and so on. But then the Center for Immigration didn't reply to me at all. So my visa, literally my visa was going to end on Thursday. And we were on like Wednesday, on today, Tuesday. And Thursday, my visa was going to expire. And I was like, guys,
that's terrifying.
What is happening? Like, I don't want to be like deported back home and not being allowed to get back in.
Right.
Because I have a relationship here. Right. So, and then like I wrote and, you know, I couldn't speak so good German. My ex-girlfriend had to like translate everything for me.
Been there.
Yeah.
Been
so there. Everybody who immigrated to Germany, I feel like has like some sort of like love and hate relationship with the KVR. Which is
oh my god! On the very
but first, you don't have to be an immigrant for that.
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah, it's universally hated by all in a very equal way.
A fun fact, and I hope I don't get caught about it. I have a permanent.
This is like public, you know, intelligence is on us since they first read the name immigrants.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
We get scanned for everything.
Yeah, so let's talk about music. But really, like one of a funny fact is one day I got out of the KVR. For those who don't know, KVR is the place for immigrants to get legal and documentation here in Munich, and I had such a bad experience. I got like, it was always like that. I never got there and I felt amazing when I left, except for the day I got my permanent residency, because then it's like, you just go there, pick it up. And then you're like, I don't have to come back.
What was like your worst KVR experience? Do you have like one that really sticks out to you?
Ooh, I guess like, so I had two very bad ones. So my very first visa was very complicated, because like, it seems like they make an effort to not tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
So they say, oh, it's online. And then you do everything that's online and you get back there and they say, oh, there's a document missing. You got to go back home and you got to figure that out. And then you go back home, you figure that out. And then you have to go to your employer and then they figure it out for you. And then you go back there. And there was a day, I swear to God, that was me, my ex-girlfriend, my employer and my mom. She was visiting me and like the four of us went to the Café Air together to like try to sort it out.
Welcome to Germany, you know? Mom.
And it was like, yeah, exactly. Like and then my mom was just like hanging around and enjoying the parks. And I was like, okay, I got to go there. And she's like, yeah, I'll go there and check it out with you. And like, she saw the fact that we had to go to the Arbeitsamt and then Café Air and then Arbeitsamt again. And my employer was there with me. He had to do, I'm not kidding. He had to change my title and my salary like there so that they could see, hey, listen, I want to have this person working for me. Just make this thing work. Right.
No.
And he was,
a good employer.
Yeah. He was super cool. Like he was a very cool guy. He went with us and it was very nice. And then that was one. And I remember like my ex-girlfriend was crying all the time. She's like, oh, this is not going to work. This is not going to work. You have to go back. And I thought that was a moment I thought, man, I got to go back. Like this is terrible.
Yeah.
This was bad. And then another very bad experience was not necessarily with me, but it was, and I don't know if we should be talking about this here because like, I feel like I do understand that. Like I do have empathy towards those people. Like they have not such a fun job. Like it's stressful, right? It's a lot of people coming there wanting to sort out. If you think about it, it's a life situation. Like you're immigrating to a country. Everything is difficult. You bring your emotional baggage with you and then you throw on those people. Right? Ah, why don't you get me my visa?
Yeah, yeah.
But then like I was one day there and then, same thing happened. Documents that I needed, they didn't mention. And I got there and was like, oh yeah, you need to do this and you need to wait for some day. And I was quite pissed. But then the worst happened to a person beside me. So I was in the room and there was two people, like people that worked there helping like us. And the guy that was helping me, he was super nice and he helped me with everything and everything got sorted out on my side. But then beside me, there was this guy like, I don't know where he was from, but he definitely didn't speak German and with his family, like wife and kids there. And then a lawyer from his company there came in and the lawyer was basically translating everything. And then the woman at Café Air screamed at the lawyer saying, you cannot speak English here. He has to speak German with me. And then he said, I'm sorry. Like he doesn't speak German. Yeah. Well, but this is the like German place and you have to speak German if you want to stay in Germany. Like, so she really screamed at him.
I've heard that in there before.
Yeah. And then he was really a lawyer and he said, I'm sorry, man. Like what you're doing is wrong. And I'm 100% sure that you don't have the rights to do it. And you clearly could see that she was just unprepared for that situation. Maybe she couldn't even speak English, which I find it incredible because it's the Center for International Workforce.
This is the thing that throws me off about that place is like, they know that every single person coming in there, every single one of them is likely to not be great at German. I mean, not be fluent unless
especially
they're
in
just
the beginning,
like,
right?
Yeah. Unless they're like, you know, linguists who have studied the language and moved there for the language, you're 90% sure to find most people there will not speak the language. So this like intense aggression and like the obstacles they put against the people going in there, they don't want to go there. They don't want to bother you. They don't want to deal with the paperwork. They're just trying to go home and like, be like, okay, paperwork's done. Yeah. Like, you know, how can you help me? And they're like, I don't want to help you. I don't want to deal with it.
It happens. Yeah.
But I can understand a little bit the frustration on both sides. Like,
yeah, I do.
Not being able to express yourself, whether it's the immigrant coming there, not being able to speak German, or I don't know, like you mentioned, the woman working there, not being able to speak English. Mm-hmm. Like, why don't they just like, why don't they have people working there who speak better English? Then I thought, okay, probably people with a good English level probably go for other jobs, but still, how can they not teach the people already working there?
Why can't that be a
giving them courses?
Yeah. It could even be a requirement. Like if you're going to study for this position, English is like a part of the program.
Yeah. But then I'm not sure if so many people that like what I want to say would do it that are good at English because they probably find other jobs.
Like for these jobs at KVR, is it not like an established position?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
But also my experience isn't obviously like Kaffee in other German cities is rather called like Bürgeramt, etc. So it's not just for immigrants. Also, like when I went, when you move in, like within Munich and you go to a new place and you get your like your new address official or anything, or you need a new passport, whatever, you always have to go there. And obviously, like I have been in situations where people next to me had the same struggles, and my experience, and only my experience, that like the people I heard definitely didn't were that good in any other language besides German. But that's only my experience as well.
And can we even judge them so much for that when it's like,
no. And country, I think to me, like it's a matter of time. Like, come on, we can, like technology is there. Like, let's do this online. Let's make it easier for everybody. And let's give those jobs that like let's get other jobs for those people. I don't know. Like, I'm not here to save the world, but like, it's really, if you think about it,
catch up.
It's time to catch up really. Yeah. Like it's a lot of documentation work, and I do get it. Because one thing that I was super, like this strikes me a lot in Germany is that like privacy is this big thing. Of course, I do understand that. Mm-hmm. And then, but in every area, right? So like banking in Germany, when I arrived here, it felt like I was in Stone Age compared to Brazil.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get it. We have a lot of fraud in Brazil because we try everything, like everything that comes out, like technology wise, Brazilians are just like diving deep in, oh, let's do this, you know? And then banks are like, actually Brazilian banks were I can't say voted, but like they were named as like some of the most technological banks. Like there's a huge company there, like a bank now, a digital bank in Brazil that just got like billions in investment and so on. Like, because they really like just gave it a try. There might be more fraud, and I do get the privacy part.
Yeah.
But like, I guess like Germany would do a favor to its like social environment if things would be easier, or if we would just use technology in our favor, I guess.
Yeah, but that's one of the big topics also for the upcoming election. But the thing is, like, for the past like 20 years plus, like since maybe late 80s, early 90s, it started to be a thing that in office you have computers and stuff. Like, starting from that point of the digital age.
Yeah.
Like, this country is a pretty old society and has always been ruled by pretty old people.
Yeah.
Like in like maybe politicians or people on boards of huge companies, etc. Mm-hmm. And there's a strong conservative thinking about such things. Like, okay, we have a running system. Why change it? Mm-hmm. And now we're in a situation where we are really confronted with there is a real need to change it, because it could make things so easy. Like at the beginning of the pandemic, I saw a TV piece on the news about Gesundheitsamt, mm-hmm. like health office.
The health ministry, a health
office. From Berlin. And they said, like with test results, et cetera, and registering everything, he added it up, and they lose 1 day a week just because they have to fax everything.
Oh my God.
Give me a break, man.
Okay, this podcast's over. I'm going back to Brazil.
Can we make a physical product we mail to the listeners?
Maybe we transcribe it and make a book out of every of this episode. And
then they might get
But we won't use software to transcribe it, but we have someone like handwriting it down.
Yeah. That's the only, I mean, it's so crazy. It seems like in every department, in at least in Bavaria, but probably in most of Germany, that like the things you want done are the things you expect just are like 10 years behind or more.
Yeah.
You know, the data protection thing, I even kind of respect, but to an extent, like you said, it's in every industry, and it can be really exhausting to have to fit into that program when coming from Brazil or coming from America. It's like, convenience is key. Let's try things. Let's make it a bit like easier. And like during the pandemic, it's kind of a stretch to say this probably, but like I want the context to be right. But the one thing I enjoyed about the way the world had to change for that was that a lot of things became easier, like meetings, appointments, getting paperwork done, I had to deal with Arbeitsamt during the pandemic, and like doing just things over phone call, just things over PDF was kind of like, oh, finally.
Yeah.
I find it kind of frustrating that like it needs those like humongous occasions for big companies or institutions, at least what I experienced in Germany, is to realize that, like with online meetings, like, since when has there been things like Skype, et cetera, like 15 years, et cetera?
Yeah, but I do get that. It's not only in Germany that, like, the whole pandemic changed everything.
Yeah.
Right. It's like the way we do business, the way we do like meetings, the way, like, everything really.
Yeah.
Like, it does make, like, my job, for I'm not only a musician.
That's what I wanted to get to.
Yes.
Because we talked about the digital age in Germany. And you mentioned, so we know you're an immigrant.
Yeah.
But are you a Nazi-Fazi immigrant? And we can say yes in two ways, I guess.
Yeah, and yes.
Yeah, and yes.
He's a jokester.
Oh! Oh, we gotta...
I missed that soundboard.
I mean, like, because both of the like, your main job and your music.
You mean artsy?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But I would say, like, it's funny. Because, yes, music definitely.
How is stripping artsy?
Yeah, so for those who don't know, there's a nightclub in Munich that is struggling a lot to survive now with the pandemic. And
there's a GoFundMe.
Yeah, PayPal me, like, we're not working. No, so, like, I'm a designer, right? And I come from graphic design and art direction, which is, I would say, more artsy than what I do now.
Okay.
Like, now I'm a product designer, UX designer. So designing basically user experiences in applications, right? And although you'd like to think, oh, this is artsy, because yeah, you do move pixels around and you do, like, draw beautiful things sometimes, and you get illustrations together, animations, blah, blah, blah. It's not really. Like, I feel like it's way more into the...
Like technical,
more on the psychological side of design than the artsy part of design. At least, like, user experience, because you really need to understand users, you need to understand people, and you need to understand what they do and what they want. And then you need to build not only a beautiful screen, but a beautiful screen that works
for anybody.
Exactly. That is accessible. And that works for their purposes. Mm-hmm. And if you think about building a product for older people, then, like, that older people can actually use it, because we think, like, oh, we're not digital natives, but we're almost there. Giving away our ages. Like, we're almost there. And, like, we know how to use it, and everybody knows how to use it. But, like, if you have a product for a little bit older generation, like my parents,
right,
it's already a completely different thing you need to think about when designing. So it's not like, oh, I'm an artist, I'm going to do whatever I think is beautiful and put it out there.
And they're going to like it or not. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I guess on that part, it's funny, because I do feel that I have these two very different spectrums in my brain, where, like, sometimes I can be very analytical and think in the psychological way of doing things, and kind of like where I found that my visual art skills would fit better, because I was an art director before and I liked it, but I realized, oh, I actually like more the human part of this design thing. And then I leave it when work is over, and then I focus on music, which is then, like, who am I as an artist?
Do you find, like, your skills in design, like, overlapping at all into your ways of marketing yourself as an artist?
Yes, definitely. So yeah, this is definitely something that helps. I come also from marketing, so I studied marketing in university.
Oh, he's so, got all the corners covered.
Full package.
Yeah, no, so I come, like, I studied marketing and advertising, worked in advertising agencies for quite a while. In Brazil, then freelanced for a while, more in the branding area, and then migrated into digital design slowly, and then into product design. So I kind of covered...
Funny thing, you moved to Germany the same time.
Yes.
We talked about, like, how digital things work here or not.
Yeah, so and I moved to Germany in that process of changing my career. I've always done music as well. So, like, music has always been there, but then, like, the real part of... putting music out and really, like, focusing it is happening now. My own music, right? But, like, the design part and marketing, like, I brought it all from my studies and what I started working at when I was 16 in advertising. So it was very young.
What kind of job was that?
It was a junior art director. I applied. I had not even gotten into university, and I saw an opening for an internship. Yeah. And I applied and the guys liked the application. And it was my first agency and they were super cool. They taught me like a lot of what I knew about advertising back then. And then, but then slowly I realized advertising wasn't for me. Like I was,
is that normal though in Brazil that they can take people so young, or were you kind of an outlier?
Oh dude, have you never heard of child labor? I mean, Brazil is big on that. No,
yeah, child labor.
Just kidding. No, just kidding. No, yeah, it's normal. It's normal. Actually,
that's crazy.
This is funny because I moved to Germany and one of the big cultural differences I felt was people my age had never worked before.
Yeah.
When I moved here, like I was 24, dude, 23.
That blew me away too.
And I was like, people were still in university and chilling.
At like 32. Yeah. They're still university. Yeah. They're like, just my art Abschluss isn't finished yet. Or whatever. It's like, what are you talking? Exactly. What are you doing?
And I feel like in America, right? Brazil and South America, like there's a lot more pressure somehow. Like you
100%.
Need to, and I feel like in Brazil, the pressure comes from, you better make it. Otherwise you're going to have a shitty life.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is sad. Like we don't have the social welfare system that you have it in Germany.
Right.
That you can chill. But, and not chill so in a bad way. Like
totally different.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Not chill in a bad way because I see people like here, like I meet like incredibly smart people here coming out of university without a job, without the experience, but incredibly smart people that had the time to think what they want to do and so on. And I actually joined advertising without really knowing what I wanted to do. I just like, oh, I want to make creative stuff for TV.
Like and, I got to work. Let's try that.
And the fun fact is all my friends went into music. They like my best friends are musicians, graduated musicians. And I was already a musician. I played with them and so on. Well, fun fact, I couldn't call myself a musician up until I released my single this year. So
you chose not to, or you didn't want to?
What do you mean?
You said you didn't call yourself a musician until you released your single.
Yeah. So this is the funny thing. I could never call myself a musician out of respect for my friends' studies and from the career that they chose, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really like, I know I can sing. I know I have a band. I know I performed in stages and
you
I know.
You can play guitar. You play piano
exactly.
as well.
Piano, right. guitar and so on. But piano is recent, but we can talk about that later. But like, I can't do all that, but these guys are incredible musicians.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
You know? So like I had this stigma that I felt like, nah, I'm not gonna call myself a musician. And they were all like, dude, you are a musician. Like you do that.
Technically are. Yeah.
But I couldn't up until and my girlfriend actually said, like, she makes fun of me. Like, she's like, dude, stop calling yourself that. Like, you are a musician. You do that. And her brother is a crazy musician as well. He does that as well. He like supports me. And but it was to me very important to like make it and release a work related to music now, which now I can say, OK, I'm a musician. And if somebody asks me, I can say, oh, I'm a designer and a musician, because like. Oh, you're a musician. What do you do? Oh, I'm on Spotify. Go check it out.
Well, dude.
So it's like, you know, this feeling of like,
there's so much responsibility behind a title, you know?
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
I know exactly what you mean. Like even when we first started this, I mean, we've been doing this for 2 years and I should feel more comfortable saying like, yeah, I'm a podcaster. Like,
yeah.
You know, that is what this
dude, I
is.
Feel like a podcast right now.
I mean, you're killing it. I think you're going to steal my job, but like,
he's going to be the guest next time.
But you know, the language fits your mentality towards what you do. So instead of saying like, I'm a podcaster or I'm a musician, you might say, oh, I have a podcast or like, sometimes I play music, you know, because you might feel like, my friend Vivi, who we've had on the show before, is exactly one of these types you're talking about. Very well-studied musician, extremely talented, like beyond anything I'll ever know as a musician. So when I'm next to her, I'm learning a lot, but I also kind of get insecure inward. And when someone talks to us about like projects we used to have or something, I tend to describe it, maybe not putting myself down, but like lifting her up way more because I don't want to be like, I'm not in the same field. Yeah. Is that,
know
you
the
know?
Feeling. Yeah.
But then she'll come up and be like, why'd you do that? Like you wrote the song. You're a songwriter. Why don't you say you're a songwriter?
So this is what I was going to say. We can take the root of the songwriter because like, that's what made me more comfortable to call myself a musician, to be honest, because I write songs and I write songs for a long time already. I have a bunch of songs written that nobody ever heard and that I'm really excited to share, to publish, not like songs that I never even played to my friends and family. Right. And then I realized, okay, there's a ton of talented musicians who can play anything, jazz, whatever, but they cannot write songs. There really, like they have difficulty writing songs. And this is what my best friend told me, like, dude, you write songs, like you wrote these songs that we played on stage. And with my band in Brazil, I wrote like pretty much, I wouldn't say all, but like most of the songs that we were actually recording for the second album, which never came out, but due to problems with the band, and the band kind of like dismantled itself after a while. But the songs were there, and they are still there. Actually, there are songs that are recorded that I never released, right? And then I realized, okay, this is also being a musician. Like a songwriter is technically a musician, unless it's just literally writing the song, then you probably... And the label doesn't really matter, right? If you think about it. Because like if it's turning into music, then it's a musician. And I heard a nice phrase these days, and I'm sorry, I cannot credit because I don't remember really where it was. It was in a video on YouTube or something. But like you are what you do, right? So if you're like getting your guitar and playing music and recording stuff, and then even if you're just using your Instagram to release that, like... Technically, you are a musician. You can call yourself that, because the thing is, if you're effectively touching people with what you do, with art, then I guess you're effectively you're like, a musician.
Yeah,
because if your music touches people, and like with the release now from my song, I've never gotten so much like positive feedback,
right,
and reassuring feedback that I'm like, yes, this is it. I'm on the right course. Like I'm doing the right thing because people that I didn't talk for ages or people that I didn't even know are there and are starting to follow me and are starting to support me. And you realize, okay, the work that came from inside, from deep within my soul, the words that I wrote and the melodies that I created with my voice and then produced it and I released it are out there touching people, and they are making people feel something.
Yeah.
And that's what art is all about.
No. Yeah.
So then you can call yourself a musician, I guess. Like, so if you, and not only then, right? I think like there's not a level, oh, there you can call yourself a musician. But for me, that was the important part. Like having this, okay, I know I can do design because like I get paid for that job, and I have a boss that says, oh, you can do a good job. So, oh.
Designer.
I'm a designer.
No.
Yeah. And then now like the reassuring feedback from people saying, dude, I love your music. Like I add it to my playlist and I like it and I'm listening to it. And people sending me pictures
of them listening to it.
Exactly.
Or videos of them in their car.
Exactly.
It's like, dude, your heart explodes.
Man, like people that I don't even know their face, how they look like, are literally like sending me videos of them or making videos with my song as a soundtrack on Instagram.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, that's crazy. This like is like
the best feeling, right?
It's crazy. Yeah.
But it needs these moments. Because I had a pretty similar experience with what I do, like being a journalist. And I don't know, that might be different in Brazil, but in Germany, it is a big thing that like legally, everyone who publishes anything can call himself a journalist. Like there's no certain degree for that or nor protected job title has to do with the Nazis.
Really?
Like, yeah, you don't want to build a form of elite that controls the media, etc. That's why.
Oh, that actually makes a lot of sense.
If you release something like this podcast, you could call yourself a journalist, and that makes you struck quite a lot. And I started.
Am I a journalist for being on this?
He's a journalist. I'm a journalist. He's a journalist.
Yeah, please hire me.
She is.
I can make very great articles about your business.
but that also makes you like just like because there's no like degree for calling yourself a musician or an artist. And I had that same experience because I started here at the station, and you always feel like, yeah, what you're doing here is like playing something that other people, like real journalists do. And it kind of worked on me for quite a while until I realized being out as a reporter with like people I thought were real journalists from bigger news outlets, etc. And realize somehow, okay, they're basically just doing the same thing. The only difference is that the outlet they work for probably reaches way more people.
I get it.
But what they do is the same thing. And I guess it's like probably pretty similar to what you described.
Yeah, but if you think about it, this is, I guess, where it comes, like this is the part that gets interesting. Music is what you said. You don't really need a diploma or a degree to be a musician, right? If you make music, you make music and that's it. And art in general, if you want to paint, you can paint. And if somebody likes it, you're a painter, right? And that's where I think art could, like, the problem of art valuing itself, because as a musician, we're passionate about what we do. Mm-hmm. Right. And then in, if you think, like, I think a lot about business when I think about music, and like not music business necessarily only, but like business, because I come from the business side. Right. So I think a lot about this, like, what is it that when we go and spend our time at work, and give basically our lifetime to a job, what is it that, that is so valuable that we get paid and paid well for what we do, right? Right. And what is it that in music or in art, you don't have the same value for it?
That's interesting.
For it. Because because I feel it has to do a little bit with the exploitation from capitalism of passion. Because if you think about it, it's magnificent to have artists that are passionate about what they do.
Yeah.
And that would do it for free. And that would do it at any time. And that would do it in, despite of any conditions.
No.
Like, I would not work as a designer for anybody. Well, I wouldn't say anybody. If my mom asked me to do something. Like,
no, like, my mom asked you to do a birthday card for my sister. I'll send an invoice.
Exactly. No, but really, like, I realized with my, so I can put design in this box. Like, I know how to do it. Yeah. I've been instructed on how to do it. It offers value to a company. It creates, it generates value, right?
Yeah.
And it has a price. What is the price for the art that comes from within you?
Man.
So like, it's tough.
No.
Because I'm just beginning on music, and I guess like the music business gurus, or like the A&R from recording labels and all these people, they probably know already what they want and what they know that is going to be profitable. But
sure.
But like, as an artist, you usually, and that's what happens to a lot of musicians also in major labels, I guess. I've not been there, but like some that like leave the major labels saying like, well, I can't do this anymore, or like, I want to be independent again, or artists like Prince that like after a while became independent again, like, because they realized, and I guess the music business is not like that anymore, but they realized, no, like I'm being exploited anyway.
Right.
And I totally understand the music business. It has to survive. But then
it's not easy.
It's tricky, man, because you're getting like into the guts of artists and you deciding what value that has.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Well, actually, speaking of your art, should we take a little look at your most recent song? We can look at.
Sure. Is this like official somewhere over the right now?
I think it was that guy. So tell us just a little bit. So this is your new song, Something New.
Yeah. Yeah.
When did you release it?
I released it like a couple of weeks ago, actually, Friday the 11th of June, which was one day before my birthday.
Oh, nice.
So I decided to give it myself. This is the thing, like this whole storytelling, right? Coming behind me, like I need to call myself a musician. And I realized, oh, it's going to be a great birthday present to myself if I start my 32nd year of life as a musician. And then I released on the 11th and the 12th was my birthday. And that was it. And it felt great. It felt
and
right.
I already know you did some pretty interesting things like promo-wise about it.
Oh, yes.
But I'd say we first listen to it.
Yeah, let's take a little look.
Have you asked yourself, are you ready to find what's the toll it takes? Will I fall or fly?
Excellent, man. I really love, like, so you produced this with your friend Sebastian, right?
Yeah, Sebastian Gampel.
man, this like MIDI bass in there, it sounds so cool.
It's so many layers.
It's a lot of layers too. You hear it really great with headphones.
Yeah. So Basti is this, he's like this, I mean, great friend of mine. And since we met each other, we realized, oh, we should do something together. Mm-hmm. And that was like when I just moved to Germany, to Munich. And yeah, we always wanted to do something. And then he was actually mixing the stuff from my band in Brazil. So when I was still in Brazil, I was in contact with him and he was mixing some stuff. And in the end, as I said, it didn't work out with the band. But then we stayed in contact. We were like, oh, let's try to do something. And one day I just invited him over and jammed some of the songs. I played some of my songs, like, dude, let's produce this. And he's this guy, like, if you go to his profile, he's like a guy from the synth wave age, like from the 80s.
Really?
So he loves that kind of stuff, like a lot of production, a lot of stuff. And sometimes I even have to bring him down a little bit. Like, Basti, this is too much. And we kind of like, but I guess we find balance. Like I think like every time when we both knew the song was ready, like we both knew the song was ready because it was not too much. It was not too little. It was like where we wanted it to be.
Yeah. Perfect amount.
Yeah. And the bass. Like a fun fact, like I always love to play with live bands, but I'm learning with him to like let go of that and just think music as like music is music, right? There's a song I wrote. What can we do with it? And it could be a band, but it could also not be a band. It could be like everything in the box, right? As like produced without like a live band playing. And then I kind of like got open to that idea. I always had like some sort of prejudice with electronic music when I was younger because I came from like heavy metal bands and stuff. And I love this, wow, playing live concerts and only live playing musicians are the real musicians.
Yeah, yeah.
Stupid childhood and thinking that way. But then like I realized, wow, there's so much that you can do with like production value and so on.
Yeah.
And I have to say like Basti has a crazy left hand on the piano.
Really?
Where is the bass area, right? So he has crazy bass lines that he brings in. And the next songs that we're releasing, which are part of a kind of an EP, they are way more into the groovy spectrum. So
okay. They
bring these groovy things and these groovy tones, also bass, also synth basses. And I'm looking forward for you guys to hear it. Like it's going to be
yeah, really
nice.
I saw like, because you guys had done a previous interview for M94.5 and I
yes, we gotta say that's also I know another story link, about right? that. We can add a link here.
So you guys actually had done an interview before on M94.5 and you showed like the new song, something new, and then you talked about you have another single coming called Damn Dream.
Yeah.
Right. But one of the most interesting things in that conversation was that you mentioned that you and this producer, Sebastian, have built your own studio.
Yeah.
I got to know more about that, man.
Yeah. And it, like, it's a funny story. We, Basti, we started producing something new actually in Basti's home studio, which I swear to God, it was like, this was the size, like this hallway, this little space here. And from you up into this plant here. And that was the studio. So it was a hallway, like a little corridor that he like isolated somehow acoustically,
and
very poorly, right? It was just like a home studio, but that's where he did all his stuff because he did like all the synthwave stuff and it could be done just with MIDI control basically. And you could pretty much do everything. Mm-hmm. And that's where we started producing something new. And then Basti was like, man, we got to get a room. Like we got to find a room. We got to find a room to produce our stuff. Like we got to have this studio also because he got a baby. So he needed another room for the baby, which would be that studio room to like his home studio room to leave some stuff from the baby and so on. And then he started searching places and he just calls me one day, dude, I found this room. It's amazing. It's an underground room. There's like concrete above. So the neighbors are not going to complain. It's in like, we can isolate it well and so on. And I'm like, yeah, let's go check it out. And we went to check it out with another friend, Yona, as well, who's also a producer here from Munich. And then we got there and we were all like, ooh, this is cool. There was a garden in front. It's pretty chilled and it's very close to my place, to where I live.
What's the neighborhood?
It sounds pretty like a studio we know.
I wonder.
In Giesing.
What's the neighborhood?
It's in Neuhausen.
It's in Neuhausen.
Okay, no.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's not in Giesing, but it would be nice if you were being Giesing as well. I mean, no, but like, because Giesing is kind of more alternative, right? It's like, well, like chill.
It's a little more like, yeah, you know, just a little.
Like I'm on the other side of the river. But, right, Neuhausen is like close to the Olympia Park, a bit up. If you That's go to cool. Westfriedhof, that area.
That's next to my place.
Hey,
there you go. Cool. Nice.
Yeah, it's like, I can't pronounce it correctly. The station there is the tram station at the Dachauer Straße called Windrichtring.
Windrichtring.
Genau.
That's an impossible word for me as well.
Yeah.
Windrichtring.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's there at that station right there. And then, we found it and the place was amazing. And then we're like, okay, what do we do now? Like, let's build the studio. Mm-hmm. And I'm impressed with what we got there. Like it went so well. We built everything by ourselves. If you go to my Instagram channel, you can like just doing like some editing. But actually on my Instagram, you can
subscribe,
see.
Hit that notification bell.
We actually have it already open here, but we wanted to show something else later on your Instagram account.
Oh yeah.
Okay. I know already what you want to show.
You probably do.
I do.
You probably do.
Of course I do. I wouldn't have done that if it wasn't for being shown. the studio was, we just built it ourselves. And there's kind of a time lapse. That's what I wanted to say. There's a time lapse of us building it. And we built it ourselves with our hands, like the acoustic panels and the walls and the ceiling is like we hung some panels on the ceiling and we made it feel super cozy, like a nice bedroom of an apartment with a studio inside. And it's amazing. Like we just love to go there and spend time. And actually like whoever of these artsy fartsy immigrants who want to record and need to record some stuff and want to try some things. It's a tiny, of course it's a small studio, but their structure for recording vocals, some guitar and bass and piano and synthesizers and stuff. So you can actually pretty much do everything there to produce like something new was produced there. And the song sounds good. And I'm getting great feedback from other producers. They're like, whoa, this sounds pretty good. Where did you guys do it? So
I guess we should show the time lapse quick.
I wanted to say, how far down is it? So we can show.
Oh, it's on the highlights. It's on the story highlights.
Oh, that's perfect. Okay.
Yeah. So behind BTS, like behind the scenes there.
This mouse is really, here we go. It should be loading. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is Chris Holzhauser, the drummer from Moop Mama. And he's also recording with us and recorded some of our tracks, which are coming later. But if you keep on going forward, this is Steph. Oh, this is my brother-in-law.
Oh,
so he's a jazz musician and he recorded some string, some like big bass for some of the tracks that are also coming soon. And this was at Basti's home. This was like, this was his place and it's a tiny little, you see like the wall is right beside him and the other wall is right beside him on the left side as well.
So there's really like a pocket.
It's
like
a pocket.
Crammed in there.
It's a pocket. And like acoustically it was of course not great. But that's where we started everything. And literally he was sitting there on the table with the computer and I was sitting on the chair behind him. So that was it. That was the space we had. And I used to sing on a mic, turn to the wall and that was it. And then actually we recorded everything again on the new studio because we realized
let's tour inside our studio.
Okay, this was like just the empty room when we got there for the first time. Oh no, this is Basti's place. Yeah.
Should I go back one or no?
No, that's it. I was just saying, we're gonna tour inside the big studio and that's it. That's the studio. Like this was at Basti's place, and you see like it's a wall and that's it.
I like how he's kind of looking at the floor like all right, Michael.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing.
Third
my
take is the right
life.
One, huh?
Yeah, and the baby's there and stuff.
Oh, that's sweet.
But yeah, and then like if you move forward, like there's the time we finally found. yeah. So for people listening to this podcast, we're showing some funny images. Yeah, but here it is.
That's a good reminder, yeah.
So it started like that, empty room.
Oh, here's the time lapse.
And that's the time lapse, yeah. Basically, we built everything with wood.
Who's
and
the third friend helping you guys?
Yona. He's also like a producer. He's known as Volt Age on Spotify.
That's a cool name.
Yeah, and he produces other bands as well. Cool guy, my neighbor actually as well. And we just basically built it all. So like it took us, I guess, like about a month to get done with the studio. Of course, like not every day.
It's a lot of stuff to get in there.
Only the weekends. And this is like raw cool, just like creating the panels and creating the acoustic insulation. I don't know how you say that.
Oh, this is like soundproofing everything.
Soundproofing, yeah.
Oh, wow. That takes a long time.
It takes a long time. But that was great, right? So we made it and then things just fit together. And of course, it looks terrible now. But no, then... But
it's like that oddly satisfying
subreddit. Yeah.
Like,
it's great, yeah. And this was a panel like that we hung up on the ceiling.
Almost there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Yona.
I am voltage.
I am voltage.
I keep wanting to say I am voltage.
Yeah, it's kind of like voltage, I guess, like that was the idea. Ooh. And we had also some of these panels that were, that we bought it, like the acoustic, more like, and then we made the bass traps as well on the corners.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. So you need that. Like the room, it's crazy how the room was sounding terrible when we arrived. Like you could never record anything. Of course, like it's basically ceramic floors and hardwood. Hard walls.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was it. And then like on the time lapse, you see like it becoming a studio.
Dude, I can't believe that you guys found this space. It's not too insanely expensive.
No,
and you
it's
were able
not.
To soundproof everything yourselves. I mean, that's just like so such a lucky situation to be in.
It is. I mean, we like of course we
and I guess like I mean, one of the most hard, legit COVID projects. Like
yeah, it was
projects.
A great and you see like the panel hanging there with LED lamps behind. So like we really put some love into it and yeah, and it's just like, it's just a great place to hang out. Sometimes like I, when I'm working with design, I go there and I work from there because it's just chilled, you know,
sure.
just not so far from my place. And I can just go there, work from there.
But I also think it's a good feeling like for freelancers like us or just creative people to not always work from home, to go to a place to work. I think it's like that fresh.
And especially
that,
like, so now I work for a company actually, but still like we do have an office, but we work mostly from home. Right. So. And that is basically like almost like, I guess the ready.
Would you look at that?
Ooh.
Now you got the finished lights up. You got
some
you got
funny
chairs.
LED lamps and everything
inside. Lighting changes the whole game in a studio, doesn't it? It's so necessary.
Yeah, look at this. We have these red lamps here.
Everything is beautiful. The face I make when I know my songs are almost right. Oh, that was a different one.
Yeah, so that's already like behind the song.
Yeah. Well, since we're here, I thought I would show you. We have to ask about this one. I guess it's a video, but the still frame here got me.
It's a video, yeah.
So what was the inspiration behind this?
Hello world, there's my butt.
Now this is going to go viral.
Yeah. Let's get
I wish we had like a...
out in the world.
Can't even whistle. So what's the story behind this? What, was this promotional or just for fun? Or
fun fact. I was in Portugal with my best friend. We were traveling surfing. And I knew I was going to release the song and I was thinking about the strategy on how to release it, what to do and so on. But this has nothing like now it has, but it had nothing to do with, my release plan, nothing. It's just that like as an independent musician, you need to be active on social media. Like this is you got to promote yourself. There's nobody else doing it for you.
Right.
I don't have a label and I'm my own label basically.
Oh yeah.
And right. So I'm doing everything. And I was a while ago, I was still like in this, I don't want to be on Instagram all the time. Like it's kind of because it drains you.
It really does.
It really drains you. Like, right. So, but I realized, okay, I have a dream and that's related to music and that's the world now that I have to adapt. If I want my music to reach people, I have to adapt and I have to be on Instagram.
Finding that balance, right?
Yeah. And I realized like, okay, every time I think about something cool that could be content, and could be nice to share with my, I'm going to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is what I think like most of the influencers do on a daily basis. Like they basically film their lives the whole time.
Yeah.
And then like we were going to a beach to find some waves and go surfing. And we found this road that was literally empty. And
that's the ocean there.
Like,
in the
it's super
distance, right?
Idyllic, right? It's like, it's the ocean there and you're running to the ocean basically. And, dude, and there's no end to
honestly, this is an album cover. It's really a beautiful image.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is like, and then we were with a car and I said, dude, I have an idea. You're going to run naked in this road and you're going to film me. I was like, yeah, let's do it. And
he's
then
like, can you run away from me?
Yeah, exactly. And then he had the car and he was basically running behind me and filming it. And then I thought, whoa, this is very cool. I like how it looks. And I mean, my friends know me and they know that I like to, I'm Brazilian and I don't like clothes so much. I like to remove them as whenever I can when it's summer. But like, and then I realized like, oh, this is so me, like running naked on the road. Like I want to do this. And then I did it, but I didn't think about social. Oh, how am I going to post and so on? And then Something New is a song about change and about the moment of like that you're facing change in your life and you're scared as fuck. And you're like, ooh, I remember the way I felt when I wrote the song and it was like, man, I got to accept it. No. It's time to leave my past behind me and face that this is a reality, that this is happening.
Yeah.
And what is happening, we can talk about later. But like, and that was it. Like I realized this has like, well, I just try to get creative. Like, how can I use this as a piece of nice content? And then I wrote like, not a poem, but I wrote a text. I wrote something that related to change.
Yeah.
And I managed to write, and change will strip you down and get you naked.
There you go.
And I'm like, oh, I'm going to use that video. And then I made like this video. I don't know if you guys want to show it.
So does this have the music under it? Or is it, what's the audio like on it?
There's music, but it's something new. It's like
the
beginning of the song, the introduction of the song.
Just want to make sure we could use it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, here it is. Sorry.
Since when do you hear that voice saying you should go that way, but instead you keep on looking away?
Dude, you're really hoofing it too.
Yeah.
Change is going to strip you down from all your beliefs.
So you had to censor the side of your hips where everything's swinging out, right?
Change will catch up. And
dude, it's like the most idyllic image from a song. It's
like instead of our red backdrop, we should just like loop that for the next episode. Just
this. Royalties, man. If you...
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, my mom worked hard on that to make that happen, right?
And who does your normal photography? You get some very beautiful headshots here. And
yeah, so I have a ton of photography that is coming up. Like I did a nice photo shoot with friends in Brazil.
Dude, look at this building. This is great.
Yeah, this was in Portugal as well. That was my girlfriend. She took those pictures with my phone. And I have to say, like, she supports me a lot. And she, like, when she sees a nice place, she's like, oh, stay there. Let me take a picture. Because she knows
that's cool.
I'm after that. Like, I really want
to build the images.
Content and images and so on.
And it's always good to have, like, a stock of some photos that you use, like, down the road. So if you're just out of content ideas, you have backups. Exactly. That's always good.
Yeah. So, and then most of my, like, the photo shooting photography was done by this collective in Brazil. It's they're two friends of mine and they're incredible.
You are on TikTok. I looked for you earlier. I couldn't find it.
Don't share that with people that are on TikTok. Oh. No, I'm just kidding. I am on TikTok, but like I've just started and I really want
to. I find it extremely addictive, but it's like you said, like you need to use it to promote things.
Yeah.
But I think it's really hard to find that balance with TikTok. I think it's so unbelievably far more addictive than any other platform I've ever used.
No, it's incredibly addictive.
It's insane.
And the thing is, what is the content that you want to put on TikTok, right? This is what you have to ask yourself most of the times. Because like I love jokes and making fun and being funny. And I do like that the fact that I can make people laugh sometimes, right? And then I felt like, oh, TikTok is something for me. But it's super hard to really find what you want to do there. Because everybody's already doing so much. And then you start watching and you're like, oh, there's so many good people. Should I do something? But then in the end, they say, well, if you're a musician, be on TikTok. And well, I still didn't find what I want to do there. Maybe I'm going to...
I had a few friends who started.
I find super funny, sorry to interrupt you there,
no,
but that you found this spot. Like and
it has nothing to do with my music.
Exactly. Like Jordan does a lot of TikToks actually, which are kind of immigrant related. Maybe we can show one or two. You also have them on your Instagram.
Yeah, that's true.
That would be nice, yeah.
But the funny thing is it has nothing to do with his music. So he's a musician, he is there.
It's ridiculous.
The videos get the clicks, etc. But not for the music at all.
Yeah, but
it's a completely different, but like web matter. Character.
In my opinion, it doesn't matter because that's
it really
you.
Doesn't, dude.
Like you're doing that, right?
But let's look. I hate to just look at numbers, but I find it like horrible. Like you have your TikToks in your format, like what you do, like German words, and then you put one up with a music video of you, and it has like
the music.
Way less
the music
like
stuff
clicks.
Gets nothing. But see, like these are just about German words, and sometimes it's like. 40 or, I mean, it's just,
that's cool
for me. It's insane that this is 85 for that. I mean, it's just insane.
This is cool. Yeah. This is cool.
Sometimes but it's just
go up to the music stuff because that's what I still don't get where I don't get algorithms.
But see, then music stuff is nothing. Like I just released a new album recently and I used, so like, yeah. Simple Swimmer by Jordan Prince is just like two, and no one really, no one really wants that one.
Yeah, no, but I totally get it. Like, I think on TikTok, you're not really building, like your posts go to so many people that you're not like, they're not related to what you do. It's simply right. for the fact that it's there. Like, it's really like to consume that content. Yeah. And for example, there are, I find it very difficult. Like, this is why I said you need to find what you nail on TikTok, because yeah. I see these profiles. Like, there's this one profile that I found. It's like it's a Nigerian guy, and he teaches how to pronounce certain words, certain Western words.
Do you know what it's called?
I don't remember what it's called. Like, I just follow it, but I don't remember what. I can try to.
Is it an African guy?
Yeah, yeah, it's an African guy. I can actually try to find it, but to be very honest,
pronouncing English words.
Yeah, like he. Let me find it here. I got it here. Oh, TikTok.
Is it JJ Kenny? JK Kenny?
Wait, maybe. TikTok notifications.
It's like they make it so hard to just navigate the app because it starts.
You can never basically can't leave anywhere. It can go anywhere, right? And this is the thing. Like, so what I was trying to say, he found what he does, and what he does is basically, JJ Kenny. Yes,
it is
that guy. Yeah, and he basically says, pronounces words in. With the Nigerian accent, I think it's Nigerian, if I'm not wrong, like, I don't remember, but like how to pronounce these words in this, and look, like he has 1.7 million followers. And if you see his videos are exactly the same. It's literally just.
How to pronounce numbers. Five. Six.
It is funny.
Same.
Egit.
I.
So that's it. And every single video is the same.
Yeah.
Right? Every single video is exactly the same. And I feel like, oh, I follow him because I find it funny.
Yeah, sure.
How
dude,
he does that.
And so 9 million views. That's just
amazing. And then to me, like, this is it, right? This is it. That he found, like, that's it for him.
That's his thing, yeah.
Right? If he starts saying, like, hey, guys, I'm an artist. I make music and I would like you to listen to my music. He has a gigantic audience.
Yeah.
But probably when people see it for like, because literally TikTok puts your post to so many other. Yeah. This guy is incredible.
You know, Kabi.
Yeah, of course.
Dude, this guy is the king of the internet.
He's the king of the internet.
What's he doing?
He's got more followers than the actual Instagram or TikTok apps. Like more, he's got more than Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh,
like
wow.
This dude is, he's the king of the internet.
What is he doing?
Dude, it is the simplest idea in the entire world. He figured out this perfect thing. He stitches a video. There's someone being like, oh no, I got my shirt zipper stuck on my jacket. Yeah, I'll just show you. And then he just finds this perfect way to make it look really dumb what they're doing.
94.1 million views. What the fuck?
Yeah, that's good.
So someone's using a tool here to grab a cherry, and then they're using that tool to pluck out the stem. So he sits there and he goes like, well, why don't you just grab it and pull it out?
Okay, I see.
And he does this with his hands like, why? And dude, that is it.
That's all he does.
That's all he does. He finds some dumb things people do and then shows them the easy way to do it. Oh, this was... So some guy's pouring milk and Oreos into a Tesla.
You want to act like a fucking baby.
So he's there with a coffee cup. He's just like, do that.
Okay, I see.
You know what I mean?
I see.
Okay. And like, yeah, he's basically making fun out of people.
It's like a bad video for him is 20 million.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what? 100 million.
But to get that back, like to you being like, musicians and
it's a different world now. Like if you want to have, I think you have to separate things now. Like if you want to have, do you want to have like a career as a musician or do you want to try and make a career do you want to have like an internet following? I think it's not really like one and the same anymore.
Yeah. But what I see and still wonder about is like, Or is it actually something different you experience? Because you have quite an audience. Like your TikTok has grown, your Instagram has grown so much, like at least doubled itself, the audience you reach. But have you recognized any impact on on your under the like how like how many people are listening to your music or anything?
I don't think they could give less of a shit, honestly.
To your music, you mean?
Yeah, it's insane. Mm. Like the people that liked my music before the TikTok videos did well are the same people. They still find their way through, and like the numbers are what they are, and they're totally cool. And I'm definitely happy with the people that do listen to me. I'm happy for anybody that listens.
Yeah,
like,
of course. Yeah.
For every CD sale, I'm like, oh, that's so nice. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then when these TikTok videos started getting more popular, I thought, oh, and also everyone tells you, they say, oh, this is a great marketing opportunity for your music to channel it through that audience. And I tried it maybe, I don't know. Let's say I've made like 80 videos, maybe in like five of them, I've tried to push music in some way. Like I tried different techniques, like making a video clip and replacing a video with one of them, or doing a normal video that I do for TikTok and you know, tailing it at the end with something musical related, yeah, or yeah. Even just putting the song in the bottom.
Yeah. I find
those videos
are
always like,
yeah, no, I find it like tricky as well. So like on my Instagram, I have one reel that got like over 10K views. And 10K view, it was like 10,000 views on, I don't know, within go down. Like, yeah, you see my reels are like super low in views and stuff. And then you go down. They're 11K. So like, what did I do there? I basically woke up and I sang a song.
Just were naked.
I could have been a fighter, holding my fists a little tighter. Finding my breath, saying love, you did me wrong.
You know why I think, dude, this is all, by the way, first off, beautiful voice. But do you know why I think videos like this do better and why TikTok is so much bigger than Instagram these days? Because Instagram became so perfect and squared off and so polished. Like it became so not reality. And TikTok is so raw. There's so many like pimply faced, like
true,
definitely like random sporadic thoughts someone has and they film it. Sometimes it's really good. Like this was just you, like, I guess on your house, just.
No, I was traveling. It doesn't matter. But like the thing is, I think where I got it right. I mean, I'm not saying I got it right, but like how crazy this went is that song had just been released one day before.
See, that's a good idea.
And it's from an artist that like an Australian artist that I just discovered. And I really like his voice and his music. And then I'm like, oh, I'm going to do my spin of his song, mm-hmm. which like that high voice that doesn't exist in the song. I just did it myself. And like, because I felt this is what people might want to see. They might want to see like, oh, somebody just singing and that's it. And mm-hmm. and it was, and I didn't think too much. I woke up and I did that video.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, it's been a while. I didn't post anything. I'm just going to do that. Mm-hmm. And it went crazy. And then the day after I'm like, oh, I'm going to sing again another song. And I did exactly the same. And there's like, It didn't go anywhere.
You know? That's the thing. It's like, I mean, that perhaps the song was also connected to that popularity, like at that
could
right
be,
moment.
Yeah,
but dude, there's something like just TikTok in general, whatever the style is of video that I think people choose to make, whether it's like 10 crazy facts you're not hearing about, or if it's someone just playing guitar, there's something about that raw, like truth to most of these videos. Of course, there are professional filmmakers making things for it too, but like this, like when you have that teenager who's playing like an acoustic version of a Phoebe Bridgers song or something,
yeah.
There's just something raw about it that I think people want from social media,
yeah.
That Instagram doesn't quite give them anymore.
But what I wonder, because we have seen this quite often, like we or at least I heard the same story about Instagram versus Facebook. Like at some point, okay.
Right.
Like Facebook has developed its rules and like big companies know what they're doing there. And it's more about like, just reading and receiving and not so much about personal stuff anymore. It's also why they change the algorithm, another story. And like the more raw stuff is happening on Instagram. And now it sounds like the same process is happening to Instagram and moving to TikTok. And now I wonder, okay, how long can TikTok hold up to that? I think it is in the nature of this thing to not be, because people kind of crave for going viral, mm-hmm. and for that you at some point you need some form of professionalism. I mean, looking at you,
right?
I mean, I guess at least it's another game you doing these German videos than it was like with the first 10. Like
yeah,
you developed routines.
If you watch that first 20. I do something different every single time until it gets really like clean.
Yeah.
And now like the editing has a formula, the way that, you know, everything is like,
yeah. And you have, and you have a certain number of videos in mind that you want to post, like to feed the algorithm, et cetera.
Right.
Okay.
And I wonder how long like can TikTok hold this momentum,
yeah,
of its like being marketed as, okay, here's the cool raw shit, like real life shit happening. And when will it lose it? Probably.
I think it already lost, to be honest. Like, and why am I saying this? Not because TikTok is bad, but what we're clearly doing.
Probably TikTok is bad if you look at who owns it, et cetera, but that's another story.
Yeah, no, but this is what I'm saying. Like with social media in general, it's pretty much a full-time job, man. Like you probably know. You have to have a plan for your content. You have to release content pretty much every day, and you have to like try to make it engaging. Mm-hmm. And sometimes all that thought that goes into creating the content removes the authenticity. I try to stay authentic as much as I can. Okay, I put it like sunglasses in the morning to sing a song, but because I like those sunglasses, I got it from my girlfriend and she said like, oh, these are your artist sunglasses. And I took it for real. Like, yeah, I'm going to put it when I'm singing like the morning tunes, which is something I do every morning. I record a song just straight out of bed and my voice is shitty. And like, and I just want it to be like how I would sing a song to my girlfriend waking up in bed, for example. Right.
Yeah.
And I do that. And I feel like even if it doesn't have a lot of engagement, it's something I like doing also because it keeps me active making music.
Mm-hmm. But, exactly, yeah.
And learning new songs and stuff. But like the thing is, I realized it's a full-time job, man, but you're not getting paid for it.
Yeah.
You're making the money for somebody else. So like—
That's why I chose to leave all social media.
Yeah, so
yeah, he deleted everything.
I understand. Thing, I understand.
Which is amazing.
And this is the thing, like as independent artists, we're kind of— And I tell you this, there's nothing wrong with it, but— A&R labels, A&R like managers and music supervisors and all these people from big mm-hmm. labels or even small labels, mm-hmm. they say, oh, you just have to be an authentic artist and so on, blah, 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 but grow your fan base.
Yeah.
And then growing your fan base is basically like get people involved with your music.
And basically you want the label to grow your fan base and they tell you, grow your fan base first.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like, I don't think it's the label's job to grow the fan base because you never grow a fan base without being who you are. Like, so they could make you into a product.
Yeah.
But then you have to stay with that product. Exactly. But they do have the marketing machine, the money behind it.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
They could help with that.
Getting things into these big editorial playlists, for example.
Exactly. Because like once you're in an editorial playlist, man, then like your music is going to be heard for pretty much ever.
I think like the second, either the first or the second single from the new album got into an editorial and it was like Christmas for me. I'd never had that.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I can't believe that like this, you know, it's like you're saying, like once you're in there, like that's the most played song that I have because of that. And
I mean, Sebastian, the producer I work with, my friend, he has like, his work is incredible in that niche, right? Mm-hmm. In the synthwave 80s niche. It's incredible. He's like crazy good in what he does. And he has one song, which is an instrumental song. Mm-hmm. It's an intro track from his album that got into a playlist and he has over 1 million streams.
That's awesome.
Like with one song. And the others are like, no, it's not bad. It's like 20,000, 50,000, sometimes a bit more, 100,000.
Totally
no. Yeah.
But like, but he's been doing that for a while, right? Then this one song just like exploded.
Dude, that's crazy. You know?
And that's it. Like what we're doing in social media right now as artists is trying to promote ourselves with a sort of space that is given to us, mm-hmm. which I'm not going to lie, is great. You reach people that you would never reach before unless you would go touring every single weekend into different places and different countries.
That's the thing,
right? So we do have that global access now to our music, which makes sense. Like I know people from Italy. I know people, I don't know personally, but like people that wrote me from those places, Italy, mm-hmm. here in Germany, people that I never met, like that are listening to my music. Mm-hmm. And giving like, oh, I like your music. Congratulations for the release, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And they're following my story, right? That I'm starting now and I'm building this and so on.
Right.
And the cool thing is like to see people saying, wow, like you're starting now and it's that quality.
Right.
And that like that's due to the fact that like, man, we've been working on the songs for 2 years. Me and Sebastian needed to find the groove, right? Needed to find the song and so on. But like, yeah, we're doing that and it's great. But it's also, it's like, it's, you will have to work for free for a long time.
Yeah.
Or for a while until you really like get to that point where somebody notices. And it doesn't need to be a major. label. It could be like somebody from a, like an independent label here in Munich. They're like, man, like let's get behind that. Let's right. Because you seem to engage with fans, right? But what is the magic number? What is the magic quality? Is it your voice? Is it your instrumentals? Is it your face? Is it, there's so many things that could make a difference.
No,
I just think, go ahead.
Because the one thing I already want to talk about before we played your music video like ages ago is like what you actually do on social media. Because I think in this digital place that I thought had so strict rules, and I don't experience that often that people break out of it, you had quite some interesting promo ideas. And one of them I thought could be pretty interesting to discuss here, because I know also from your side how frustrated you were all of the time with Facebook ads.
Mm. Oh yeah, and I talked about that a little
and
bit earlier.
You did something pretty interesting with that to avoid just throwing like money into Facebook's huge machinery. Yeah. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. Like so let's not take the value out of Facebook ads, right? Like, so this is where people are. Instagram, Facebook, social media. These ads that they like, I worked with marketing and I worked in companies that did this every single day, had a massive team just doing that.
Yeah.
Right. And these things reach people. This is how you sell products nowadays, right? So you start a company, you start something, and then you basically, boom, you're out there with your ads and people are buying your product, and this is super easy. So for musicians, it's not that different. You can reach a lot of people that you would not reach by putting money into Facebook ads, Instagram ads, and getting there. Mm-hmm. So there's value in that, right? There is. But the money goes to Facebook and Instagram. I thought, okay, what if because I was about to release my first Facebook campaign and thinking like, what is the public and the audience? And then I thought like, hey, wait, I have a lot of friends and family that would like pre-save my song. Mm-hmm. Right, they would do like they would pre-order the song and they would like to get engaged. I wonder if I get that money that I was going to put into Facebook and I donate that money to an NGO based on the amount of pre-saves I get, if they would get behind that idea. Because there's NGOs that I work with in Brazil that I've donated before or I participated. Like this NGO specifically, I even like shot a documentary once there with them, and it was super nice. And it's the person that takes care of it is the mother of one of my best friends in Brazil. And I know them and I know they're good people. And I know the work is amazing that they do there in my hometown.
Okay.
And I thought, for like, what if and then my marketing mind came back, right? Like, what if for every single pre-save I get, I donate $1 to this institution? Mm-hmm. And basically what I tell is like, I give the responsibility to the people that follow me. Hey guys, the more you pre-save the song, more money is going to go to these kids.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to spend that money anyways, because I want to promote my music. I want to be like, I want people to listen. I want to promote it. So I'm going to go there and put it up on Facebook or on Instagram. But I'd rather donate this money to these kids. So like, make me donate money. Like, make me poor. Just like, pour your clicks onto my pre-save button and I'll donate that money.
Yeah.
And I felt like this resonated a lot with the people that follows me, the people that follow me. Because like, it really, people were like, oh, this is such a cool idea. They were sharing and they were engaging. I thought like, we could have gotten more coverage by the media itself. But man, like, I'm doing everything myself. So I wrote a press release about this idea. Hey, like, there's this artist in Germany, a Brazilian artist, and his songs are going to get money from an NGO. But like, I didn't do this early enough so that this could be covered. And so, and now I know, like, now if I would do that again, I would probably do it early enough so that maybe we have more money into this NGO and more like people pre-saving my song. Because in the end, the pre-sales or pre-saving help a lot.
Yeah,
because people get it like it triggers the algorithmic playlists and so
right,
on
right.
from Spotify and stuff. And I'm on the algorithm, like release radars from a lot of people. Release radars is one of the playlists that gets me the most streams at the moment.
Sure.
So this is awesome, right? If I would have just like put money into Facebook and Instagram, it could have gotten me close to what I got. But I heard already from some people that like pre-saves are one of the hardest things to get, because it's not easy. Like, people have to go there. It's not just clicking and listening. It's like giving your data and logging in and then clicking there that you want to
pre-save. It's like a 4-step process for people.
It is.
Yeah. And sometimes it doesn't even work.
Sometimes it doesn't even work.
Exactly. And as a UX designer, to be honest, I know the drop-off rates of these people clicking. The more button you have to click, the more steps, you give up very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. And for me, thinking I had 400 people pre-saving my song. And if you just think about it, 400 people
thought about to go through the process.
For you.
Yeah.
For you and for that idea.
And for the idea.
That's awesome. So that's to me, cool, this is what awesome. I would like to do this for every song, to be honest. I don't know if it's going to get repetitive, but I really don't care. If it's for a good cause and people get
a different one every time, keeps it kind of fresh. Yeah.
Exactly. So this is where we're going with the next release, I guess.
Nice.
When do you plan? Because I think it's probably a good moment to wrap up. But I would ask, when do you plan to release the next single? Or do you have a date in mind?
Yeah, no, I had a date in mind, but I think we're going to shift it exactly because I want to have a bit more time to do everything that I need to do before the release. I believe in about a month and a half, which is what the same I said to you. That's why I said I
must be honest. I forgot about it.
Yeah. Okay. So I, in the radio interview, I said that 1 month and a half around about, but then these weeks, we didn't have much progress because Basti had some stuff to do and I had some stuff to do. And then we didn't actually go into the studio and we need to finish a few details of the single.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, that was a nice effect. Yeah. Just for mastering and so on. But once that's done, then it's basically a countdown, 6 weeks. And
cool, man.
I usually have that 6 weeks plan. In 6 weeks, I have the master. I send it to the distributor. Mm-hmm. And then it's 6 weeks counting down. And I can just basically do everything marketing related. And let's see where this is going to go this time. I don't know.
But what I remember from this radio interview, and we said earlier, I guess, that we want to link that because there we played a very short raw snippet of your new song.
True.
So if you guys are interested in listening to at least, it's 10 seconds or something.
Probably, yeah.
But they're already awesome and something completely different than I would have expected after listening to your first single.
Yeah.
We'll link that here. And I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah. Me too, man. And where can people find you?
Well, yeah, I mean, the best place to find me is on Instagram because I am super active there and it's the place I feel the most at home in social media, Facebook. I'm there sometimes just to read through things, but mostly Instagram for sure. Yeah. It's at Mooka Slash.
We'll put that in there too.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so I wanted to change my handle to Makul because I should do it. I do own the handle makul.music, but I didn't want to have this .music on my stuff. But I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how it's going to go, but it's so far it's at Mooka Slash and you'll find me. And of course, Spotify, YouTube, and Apple Music, Tidal, every streaming platform, you can stream something new. And very soon, Damn Dream as well, the new single. And all the other singles that are coming. So there's five singles lined up to come. And the four of them will be an EP. And then next year, full album, hopefully.
That's sweet. Amazing, dude. That sounds great.
And by now, you're also officially an RC5 immigrant.
Oh! Man. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks for being open. And
always, man.
We will have to definitely bring you back on.
Sure.
For sure. I think there's so much more we can talk about Munich and immigrants. And
yeah, we haven't touched so much on Munich. And I think.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Maybe it's going to be a trilogy of whatever.
We'll have to bring you back for sure.
For sure. I'll come back at any time to talk about Munich because I really want to help the music scene in Munich to happen in a better way. And I have some plans for that. And maybe you guys can help me and we can help each other and Munich is just going to win with it. So
I love it.
Nice.
Nice, man. Thank you so much. And bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ciao, artsy fartsy immigrants. Which camera am I? This one?
All of them.
Nice. Thank you. What a wonderful episode. If you enjoyed today's episode and you like our show, please go to Apple Podcasts, give us a subscription or a review or a comment. It really helps new listeners find our show. You can also follow us on Instagram at Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. We're also now on Facebook and on YouTube and on Twitter at Fartsy Artsy. No, at Artsy Fartsy Pod. We changed it at Artsy Fartsy Pod. Woo! So, yes. And if you want to financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/JordanPrince, and where you can submit for as low as $3 a month, some money to help us get this show bigger and better just for you. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.